On the podcast today, we are going to talk about the Hindu system of the four Purushatras, which is a system that builds a purposeful path to liberation. It's a complete system. It's a life philosophy that a lot of people don't talk about, but it is one that the Hindus follow to its nth degree. Well, those who are students of Sanatana Dharma follow the four Purushatras.
Yes, this system is people like, majority of people, I think, people who are not really happy with the path of being a yogi, or just being sitting in the mountain or in the cave and meditating forever, basically, and living like a monk, like pursuing the monkhood. Again, like, it's extremely difficult path, we all know that, and very rarely people follow that path. So actually in Hinduism, they actually created system for people who are not fit for that kind of path, which is the four Purushatas.
So all of us listening and watching.
Basically, yes. That's what I was alluding to, yes.
Well, not all of us can be a yogi in a cave in the Himalayas, can we? But this is a complete system. And if we break down the word Purushata, so Purush refers to a human, a person, and Ata refers to a purpose or end. So that's why I like to say it's a purposeful path to an end or completion or liberation, because moksha is the fourth principle of this system.
Yes.
And so let's unpack this system. First of all, the four principles are dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. Now, karma, not karma, karma, K-A-M-A. And so the obvious first principle is dharma, right? So dharma is basically don't think about dharma in the sense of like I'm following Hindu dharma or Buddha dharma, like as in the teachings. Dharma in this sense is basically your innate path that actually benefits the totality. So it's kind of like your divine virtue or kind of your innate skill. In Taoism, they would probably call this Li, right? Your own organic pattern. Mm. And so this is what dharma is in that sense. It's about following that skill or innate quality that you have in this life. Some people it's music, some people they might be a guru, right? Mm. They might be their dharma, mm. right? And so that is their innate skill that actually benefits the all.
So someone, it plays a role of an anchor in your life.
Yes.
Like, so this anchor that keeps you centered by certain thoughts, words and actions. And that dharma plays that like a dutiful, the role-based part in your life, yes, so that you are doing good things, beneficial things for yourself, family, and the larger scale in society, so that you fulfill your own dharma with the sincerity and the honesty.
Exactly. Mm. The dharma in this sense, if we look at a literal meaning, it means that which supports and maintains the world. Mm. That is what dharma is. And so whatever you have, whatever skill you have or whatever talent you have or however you are as a person is what naturally supports the world. And there's another way to also think about this. It's that which it's the path that where we attain sort of progress in our life and moksha. So that's what dharma can be as well. Actually, dharma as well has a positive effect on our ego, because when you do find your skill or whatever, as you said, whatever grounds you, you're supposed to follow that to its end, right? Like, and so that may seem strange according to cultures outside of India, because we're always flip-flopping between different professions or we get interested in something else. Sometimes in India, they say, if this is what you're good at, you just keep going down that path, you know what I mean? Because you are providing something for the society. And sometimes we want to flip-flop between different skills and occupations because it's more of our own, it's our own self-interest, right? And look, there's nothing wrong with that per se, but this is how India is a lot different to the rest of the world.
Well, that's the basis of that we easily known as a like caste system. It's not really a caste system. No. It's more like a system that which provides people certain duty which fits their talents and skills and also character personalities, yep. right? So that's what differs the our way of thinking about dharma to ancient Hindus, because dharma as in duty and role is not just simply what you do in society to provide food for your family and support yourself. It's more so following your like innate path, as in what fits your personality, character, and your skill set.
Yes.
Right? That's why that plays not induced or forced way, like how we feel today, like looking for a job and make something a career for your life and whatnot, but more so an organic and natural way to find your own duty and role in the society for your family and yourself.
Yeah.
More, much more natural. And so, for example, if someone is like a, let's say just a big person, strong, physically strong, and distinctively different physicality to others and this and that, and those people might be suitable to become a police officer or like a military person or something yes. like that. So it's like this. It's more like a much more organic, natural way to find your own dharma. That's what this dharma part is all about.
Yeah. Well, the caste system, and air quotes, how the British termed it, is actually the Jativana system, right? And the Jativana system is not how the outside world interpreted it, right? And there are Hindus in this day and age that are actually writing books and that about the Jativana system, which got misinterpreted through different invaders' eyes, right? In a sense of trying to undermine Hindus as well. So they were trying to make Hindus look primitive, a lot of outside cultures. But for all of you listening and watching who probably may get triggered to what I just said, study the Jativana system, read some books on it, and actually ask Hindus about the system, and then you may have a different perspective of whatever the caste system, in air quotes, actually is. And so as you were alluding to, that kind of Jativana system contributed to whatever dharma you followed. Like you said, if you're a big guy, you're definitely going to be a police officer or a warrior, or you will be a kshatriya, right? You'll be a part of the warrior caste.
Yes.
A caste, a warrior clan.
Yes.
Like the warrior group.
Yeah.
And so, and that'll be, you know, that's what your innate talent is. Some people are a bit smaller, but they're highly intelligent and, you know, obviously they're going to get a job in some sort of governmental position, or they might be a writer or something like of this nature, right? And yes. So this is what dharma is, right? So when you operate from that, you downregulate your sense of self, your ego, if you follow it to its nth degree, right? And so that leads into the next two, right? But the second principle is artha. And now artha literally means like that which is sought after or even asked for, right? Like, and so in this sense, it's this is how it's about wealth and prosperity. And so it's, in some sense, it's that which all objectives achieved using wealth alone. So
yeah, something that like require desires, isn't it?
Yes.
Like you kind of demand of something from society, or you want to achieve something. Yeah, you are after some kind of a material prosperity,
yes.
right? So that is requesting something, ask desires.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this is why the four Purusharthas are very natural in some sense when you think about it, right? So look at it. You have a great job, or you'd follow whatever path is part of your skill set. And then so making finances and money is important, right? Like making money is important to provide for yourself and your family, because that's a natural byproduct of what you do. This can go to an extreme, obviously, but so that's a very natural thing, right? Like even if you look at yourself, if you reflect upon yourself as a young person, the first job you ever had, why did you have this job? I mean, you may have not liked this job, but the whole purpose was probably to learn about that job so that you can continue to make money from whatever that job is, right? So you got good at that job, and in turn you made money.
Yes.
And so artha here is highly important. And we hear this a lot in the modern day. This can be exaggerated though, where we hear people talk about financial freedom, right? So we want financial freedom. And okay, and look, I don't disagree with anyone who desires that, right? Because that's what the Artha principle is. It's about attaining that certain level of financial freedom that you can continue, well, onto the next principle, karma, but also that can benefit your life so that you can eventually concentrate on moksha,
yes,
on liberation. Mm-hmm. But I think that we live in a world now where everyone is hyper-focused on just making money. That's all they're about. And so we're slaves to Artha now.
Pretty much. Only one element of a Purushatta.
Yeah.
Yes, without making other three fulfilled.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Exactly. Well, maybe the next one, but...
true. Yes. So, next one is quite the opposite. It's a similar kind of desire. It's kama. More like K-A-M-A, like not karma, kama, which is more like a instinctual desires, more like a sensual desires, the sensual pleasure,
yeah,
that desire that we want to have that sensual pleasures, right?
Mm.
So whereas Artha was more like you required for something, you are requesting some sort of desires, whereas kama is more like instinctual, so it's more natural somewhat.
Yes.
That kind of desires. Again, this can lead into the extreme as well.
Yeah.
When you can keep asking for pleasure all the time, or whether from the eating delicious food or watching some, you know, great fun TV shows and whatnot, you can keep pursuing that path as well.
Or chasing girls.
Yeah, that's a big one. Well, yes.
It can get to that, yeah. Yes. But yeah, that's a good point you made about how Artha is like at the pursuit of external desires, where the karma is the intrinsic desires we have, like that are kind of innate in our sort of our character. And so the problem with those, as you alluded to, that if you continue to chase some of those, that, you know, that can take you down some pretty dark alleys. Whereas this is where dharma is important, because dharma itself can regulate both artha and kama. Because if you have a vocation that you are sincere about, or a skill or a life path that you are sincere about, you can grow with that, which actually then helps you to be better with money, and also helps you to tame certain desires, sexual desires mainly, and other sensual desires, like, you know, like you were talking about, like maybe you're addicted to eating chocolate cake, right? But if you keep eating chocolate cake, then diabetes and becoming obese is, you know, probably inevitable, right? And so you need to regulate those, and that's where dharma comes in. Dharma can regulate both artha and kama. So
it helps the having perfect balance to enjoy a certain level of pleasure in artha and kama. Right?
Yes, of course, yeah.
So you just asking enough, you demand enough of artha and kama.
Yeah, of course.
You actually, let's say kama, for instance, you actually get to learn how to really enjoy life, for example.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Really find the true joy in your life.
Mm.
And that's what real sense of kama. And artha as well, you required a certain level of wealth, not extreme amount of money,
no,
but just to be comfortable for yourself.
Exactly. And kama here is not like talking about those sort of extreme pleasures too. Like if we look at kama from the traditional sense, like if we go back to when these systems were initially created, it was always about art, music, scripture. This was what actually enjoyment was back then, pleasure. Obviously, sex, there's always going to be sex, right? Like, and that is a beautiful thing. That's how people are created, and that's how the world is maintained. And so that is an aspect, but if it's done in the spirit of love, as opposed to being animalistic, right? But that's the karma back thousands of years ago was so tame compared to what it is now. Now we have internet, TV, the pub, anything you want, you can just go and do right now.
You can choose from so many different things.
So back then all they were talking about was listening to a sitar, maybe in the afternoon, and reading the Mandukya Upanishad or something like that. This was pleasure, right?
Yes.
It's completely different. And so we need to think about also our life in holistically daily, right? Like, so if you look at your life daily, what do you do? Well, first thing in the day, usually you'll go out and you'll do your dharma to attain your artha so that you can enjoy your karma later in the day. That karma, you know, when you relax with your family and your friends. And if you, the idea is of continuing that sort of life pattern and not disturbing that life pattern. Because if one overtakes the other, then there's an imbalance.
Mm. Mm.
So even karma has to be in balance with dharma and artha. So they all have to come into balance, right? Like, because it is good to entertain yourself and have and experience enjoyment, because this is good psychologically. It's a complete system, as opposed to like a rejection of one or the other. So.
Again, another reason what I love about the Hindu culture and its systems and philosophy is that they don't look down or demonize having fun in life, for example. Right. Having fun in life and it requires a certain level of wealth, right? They actually brought it together in this system, the path to reach moksha, because those elements are actually important part of our life. It plays an important part as a human being, right? So to kind of fulfill those like desires and actually realistic idea as well, like we need to have certain wealth to eat and live right, that's, and wear clothes, and it's pretty basic and simple.
Yeah.
And of course, you need to have fun, you need to enjoy your life, so that it, this system doesn't demonize having fun is bad for you, right?
No.
So it's much more somewhat integral and inclusive.
This is what Western New Age people don't understand, because when they cling on to Hinduism, or say if they follow the path of yoga, or they're interested in Tantra or Vedanta, they don't understand the four Purushatras. So they think that it's all about moksha. We're not going to enjoy life. We're just going to abide in moksha. And usually they don't go very far because their old habits creep in. And so this is why a lot of people sometimes who are like that have never actually been to India. Where if you've gone to India, even though the philosophies are probably the greatest in the world and the most loftiest, the irony is Indian people are very real and very brutally honest. You know, so they know that they're not going to fool themselves by pretending like they're a yogi or a sadhu. They know that they're going to have to do their work possibly. And in doing their work, they enjoy themselves as well. Like, I mean, having fun in India is, there is nowhere else, I would say, in the world where you would have more fun. Because India, I mean, there's just something's always happening, right? And so when we take groups there a lot, and they always say it's like an assault on the senses, but in a really good way, you know. And we know that personally as well. And so that's something for a lot of Westerners actually to think about. It's not all lofty. It's also real as well. And you really do notice that when you go to India.
Yeah, so those people mainly from the West don't understand these four aims, the pursuits of life. Is most cases, I think they're just busy virtue signaling.
Yes.
They just want to look different. Mm. They just want to, like, you know, sit in the lotus posture and, you know, doing all the things, you know. So they just want to somewhat posture to look different and to look more holy in their sense, right?
Spiritual in their quotes, yeah.
More spiritual, that's right. I'm more spiritual than you, this sort of idea. Whereas in this system, is they purely celebrate life, purely embracing that joyfulness and also the material prosperity at a certain level, which is all part of our life.
Yeah, India is a celebration of life. If you just look at the way funerals are conducted, right, it's a stark contrast between like in the West where everything is dark and everyone is sad, and then if you go to Varanasi and you know, it's a celebration of someone's death. You know, obviously there's a few tears shed, but the psychology is completely different. It's about celebrating that person's life. And I would say the tears are less than in the West. And then that's got nothing to do with them caring less. It's a different way of seeing the world. They understand that there's something else. And it's not like a sort of a heaven or hell dichotomy. it's like either a next life or they've attained moksha. I mean, if you believe the people that live in Varanasi, if you live and die in Varanasi, then you automatically attain moksha. It's like a cheat code, right?
Yes. Yes, that's why actually a lot of Indians wish to be burned in Ganga's burning god in Varanasi, isn't
yes.
it? Like, although they might not live in Varanasi, but ultimately
yes.
that's where they want to be turned into the ashes, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, not only Varanasi, even like we actually firsthand witnessed a lot in a small town in Tamil Nadu. That every day is something, right? Always music going on, and like 4 or 5 in the morning, music cranking, and parties everywhere. And someone's born, there's party. Someone had died, there's party.
There's party, yeah.
Celebration for birth and celebration for death.
Exactly,
and again, yeah. birth and death, they are they really different?
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Well, that's how the Hindus think about
exactly.
it. Exactly.
Right? So someone had died, yes, people be sad and shed tears because they will miss those human beings. But at the same time, they celebrate their next life or, like you said, celebrate their moksha probably.
Yep. Yep.
So it's all celebration.
Exactly. And that's why in India they don't say, oh, he or she died. They are no more. No more. It just means that in that current manifestation, they are no more in that current manifestation. But yeah, there's the celebration for everything. Like you said, life, death, got a pay rise, my kids went to school, celebrate, everything's
everything. Everything. Birthdays,
yeah.
Just a big, big festival every day.
I love it, I love it. Anyway, so after the third principle, we come to the fourth and final principle, which we've spoke about obviously a little bit, which is obviously moksha. And moksha simply means liberation, or you could say enlightenment if you want, but it means liberated, not actually upon death, but liberated in this life, what we would term a jivan mukta.
Mm-hmm.
A jivan mukta means a jiva, meaning the jivatman is what soul is, right? So jiva is persona system, atman is our undifferentiated consciousness. When they're entangled, that's what soul is, that's what comes back life after life. Finally, the jivatman has attained mukti.
Mm.
Which is liberation, same, moksha.
Moksha.
So jivan mukta. So moksha here means liberated in this life. Again, Hinduism is about the eternal now. It's not about that eternity is in time somewhere after you die. That's a strange concept, right? Because eternity can only ever be ever present.
Yes.
It can't be after death. It can't be yesterday. It can only be right now in this present moment, which we're all experiencing together. And so moksha is this highest attainment of life and of the of these four purusharthas.
Yeah, in fact, actually in Vedas, moksha wasn't part of the purushartha because it came, I think, later came into this picture. So dharma, artha, kama in Vedas more interpreted in Dharma Sutra, Artha Sutra, Kama Sutra, we're very familiar, right? So
yeah.
They have those sutras which explain those three elements. And moksha is more so kind of completed in Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, and Yoga Sutra. That makes sense, right? Because
yeah.
those three texts came way later. Mm. Like, again, Upanishad means the end of Vedas, right?
Yeah.
So that this idea of moksha concluded at the end of this Vedic era, actually.
Yeah.
So again, the ultimate goal or purpose of life.
Yes.
The complete end of all debts, right?
Of course. Yeah.
So complete liberation.
Yeah. You have the Vedic period and you have the Puranic period, basically, like as you said, like with the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, the Puranas, basically.
Yeah.
And you have this. And so then moksha becomes something most important with the four purusharthas. And the idea here is that, in some sense, you hear about when people fulfill their duty in life, they become a vanaprastha. And a vanaprastha means someone who's physically have just left society and they become a forest dweller, sage, philosopher, whatever you like to call them. And you see this a lot, particularly in older literature, where you're particularly with men, like once they've fulfilled their family duty and, you know, the kids grew up all right, the wife's okay, they're like cello, I'm out. And so and then they go into the forest and then they practice to become to attain moksha, right? They become a vanaprastha, which is actually different to sannyasin, because a sannyasin is someone who's kind of following the path of moksha. They're not even worried about the other three purusharthas in some sense. Whereas like for normal people like you and I and everyone listening and watching, that is kind of the layout for a Hindu. Is like, and it doesn't mean you have to go to the forest, right? But it means that you practice a heightened level of vairagya, of worldly dispassion, and you've dedicated your life to moksha, to meditation, contemplation, and in this sense, on the four Mahavakyas, the four great sayings of the Vedas, is what you've focused your life on, and that's what moksha is, right? It's a liberation from the society itself, and so you are free to leave the world in this sense.
It's I don't think it's kind of a linear process, but not linear. No. As in literal, real sense, realistic sense. It's more like from understanding the what the purushatta is stand for, and even when you go through dharma, artha, kamma, those process, you still have a good understanding of what moksha is, because since that being the ultimate goal of life, that is the real contentment, seeking the self-contentment, self-fulfillment, which being the ultimate goal of life, so that you already know that is your final step while you are going through these other three elements.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be linear. It can be linear, but it's often not in some sense. And like if we look at Advaita Vedanta anyway, like we are all living in moksha right now, but the only thing is we're caught up in worldly activity and this and that, and we forget that freedom and liberation is our true nature. And so in some sense, maybe if you follow dharma, artha and kamma, maybe after a while you actually start to realize what Advaita Vedanta is saying about that. Like, oh, wait up, actually, I'm already naturally free. I don't have to go to the forest maybe, you know. It doesn't have to be a linear process. I can wake up right now in my vocation and just be awake in this present moment, as opposed to thinking about it in a linear way. But as we know in Hinduism, there are a lot of systems that have stages and levels and et cetera as a frame of reference, but not meant to be taken literally all the time, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, to take it as a frame of reference is what's important,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, those are the four elements of this system. But again, that's kind of showing how to live your really rich spiritual life,
yes.
And what it takes to achieve that.
Yes.
Right. So when you follow those four aims, four pursuits, then your life will naturally be content and fulfilled.
That's right. That's right. And that's why it's in some sense a holistic system, which produces, let's say if it doesn't produce a yogi, it at least produces very good people, you know, very honest, sincere, down-to-earth people. And so it's a really noble system that a lot of people could apply to their own life, not just within India, but outside of India as well, right? If you follow that system, you understand that you have a certain function in this world, right? In Taoism, they talk about not being attached to what you do, but the function you provide for the world. So, okay, we provide this podcast. Maybe it's a certain function for other people. We get satisfaction out of it as well, because we can do it and we can provide it for other people. And same with other things, right? Like maybe for yourself with music, right? You learn music, you're good at music, and you provide that music for other people. Whereas, okay, there's probably days where you go, oh, I want to try to do something else, but nothing will give you that sense of fulfillment, actually. So that's why this system actually produces noble people, and maybe why in the Vedas why they didn't even talk about moksha, because in some sense it was about, you know, at least we need some good people hanging around, you know what I mean? But then eventually people wanted to be like the rishis, right? They wanted to attain moksha.
I think this can give us a really good roadmap in life, especially nowadays. We, like lots of people, have no purpose in life, and like, they don't really know what kind of life will make them feel happy and fulfilled and these kind of things. But this learning this Purushatta can give us like a really good frame of reference and a roadmap to live rich life and rich and spiritual and also fulfilling life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you guys next time.